I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me today, as always, are the vicars of podcasting, Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
I kind of like that. That should be on our official title.
It is kind of a cool, it's good. I'm
making business cards.
I'm self-promoting here because I came up with the idea, but I do like it.
Are you the pastor of podcasting?
What do you call it?
I don't know. That's kind of sick.
Well, you guys would be the Vicar's Forain of podcasting.
Vicar
is that
for
rain, correct?
Vicar for snow, Vicar for...
Okay.
I just prefer headmaster of podcasting.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
we have a special guest in the studio today, the man with maybe the coolest title in the diocese, the Vicar General of the diocese, Father David Lees.
Ohayo kaiso.
Oh!
What was that?
That's a shout out to all your Japanese listeners.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Oh, we did. That's right.
I last couple podcasts, I heard that Japan was the... So
you are going to be the favorite person of our Japanese audience. Yes. They're going to ask us for pictures of you signed that we'll have to send back.
Siri knows everything. Good morning. Good morning in Japanese.
Do you have a background in Japanese or did you just learn that?
You are more attentive to our audience than we are.
As a vicar general, you got to pick up on all these
things. That's the wisdom of the office there.
Exactly.
Well, in your honor, we are recording today in the St. David studio, which, frankly, I don't really know anything about the bare minimum about St. David. I don't know if you know anything about him.
The St. David I pray to is King David.
Okay.
Of the Old Testament.
Is he from the British Isles?
He's a British Isles, 600s abbot,
that's
I think,
extent.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know that much of it, but my go-to is David of the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's fine.
Good. Very good.
The one and only trip to the Holy Land that I made in 2019, we were in Jerusalem and we visited David's tomb.
Oh,
and
cool.
So my dad was with me. I'm David Jr. He's David Sr.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We both had a pose shot with King David's tomb.
That's sweet.
David's a great name. It is a great name.
It's man strong. After the Lord's own heart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That was my dad's name. So my dad was David Arnold, and there is south of St. Louis in Arnold, Missouri. Name of the town is Arnold, and the local parish is St. David. So it's St. David of Arnold, Missouri. So I had to make a pilgrimage one of the times when I was visiting Kenry. It's not the most inspiring of churches on the interior, but I did do a holy hour for the repose of my dad's soul while there. It was just kind of cool to see St. David, Arnold, Missouri.
Have you ever gone by Dave or anything else?
No, always David. Yeah.
That's the move.
Yeah, I think it is the move.
I'll let people get by with Dave, but not most everybody. And I go by Father David. But there are those that prefer Father Lees, so not too stringent on it.
Yeah, and especially, and we'll get into this in a moment, but Father Lees is a little confusing because there being another Father Lees in the diocese, I could see that being problematic. So
that's right.
Well, before we get into that, maybe we should just explain to people, what is a vicar general? Every diocese has one, and the priests obviously know it. But
do we?
In
all seriousness, I do think we're going to learn something here if you give your job description.
Yeah.
Teach us. What is a vicar general?
Do little kids grow up wanting to become the vicar general?
Probably not. No. I have served in this role almost 8 years now. So I've been a priest. I'll be 25 years this coming May. So we're approaching that quarter century mark.
Congrats.
Yeah. 17 years of that was in pastoral ministry in parishes. And then in 2015, Bishop Kimmy extended the invitation to me to become the vicar general. And I recall very clearly the conversation that we had. He boiled it down to saying, Father David, as vicar general, basically you can do everything that I can do except ordain priests and consecrate the oil of chrism at the chrism mass.
Okay.
But that word vicar comes from that word vicarious. So a vicar shares in the delegated authority of the bishop to him. And so as vicar general, I have general vicarious authority. According to canon law, am even considered to be an ordinary in support of the bishop's ministry. So bishop not being able to be everywhere and do everything that a pastor of a diocese has to do relies on his vicar general and other Episcopal vicars to assist him. So we have several other vicars. We have our vicar for priests, Father Pat York.
We're going to do an interview with him before too long.
Yeah, yeah. And so he has the specific bishop's authority, if you will, in relationships with the health and well-being of our priests. We have our vicar for evangelization, discipleship, and stewardship, Father John Urach. He has care in that area of the stewardship way of life and evangelization in our diocese, speaks with the authority of the bishop. And then finally, our judicial vicar, Father Brian Nelson, who takes care of our tribunal office and assists the bishop in all canonical matters related to that. So speaking of yourselves as vicars today, you know, kind of hit that theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like
Chad,
as vicars,
lives, you live vicariously through us.
Oh, I that's think. A good point.
Isn't that the truth?
There you go.
Every time I see you touch your hair, I'm living vicariously through you.
You wish.
Well, Father David and I have the same haircut. So right. At least there's equality in the room. There's like a dividing line
between
those with hair and those without.
Yes. I've been trying to get Garrett to care about his hair since we were 15 years old and nothing. Nothing. 15 years I've been trying and no dice.
It works. It works. Well, last week, we are actually interviewing your younger brother, Father yes. Jared Lees. And so actually, I think it wasn't really planned this way, but it's kind of cool to have your guys' episodes back to back, just kind of compare your different experiences. But one of the things we kind of went into a tangent in our last episode was on Father Jared's latest hobbies, building Lego models. Mm-hmm. The listeners already know kind of what our hobbies are. Gare likes playing basketball. Drew likes walking around the mall in velour tracksuits.
What's wrong with you? I did used to do that. That used to be part of my, not the velour tracksuits. But that used to be part of my day off.
I know.
Yeah, we've talked
but about it. But how I envision once. You is in a 1970s old man mafia velour tracksuit walking around the office. That's my favorite image of you.
Soon enough. Once I get just a little older, I think I can pull that off.
Yeah, yeah.
But so our listeners know our hobbies. We talked about Father Jared's hobbies a little bit. What are the hobbies of you or of a vicar general?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I actually kind of prefer the term pastime.
Okay.
You know, to me, a hobby, you know, is something that a person really maybe develops some sort of expertise in or a unique ability,
mm-hmm.
you know, like painting, woodworking, building models, collecting stamps, whatever. You know, I don't really invest myself in anything quite like that, but I have pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my big pastimes is I do have an amazing dog named Bazinga. And I do remember the episode where you guys were kind of panning dog owners.
Both the Lease brothers have been angry with us about this.
So, do all leases have dogs or is it just you and Jared?
No, just Jared and I.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Actually, we have a brother, Shane, up in Michigan. Uh-huh. He's got three dogs.
Okay.
So we grew up with outdoor dogs, but we've evolved into like indoor dogs. He's a 70-pound husky cattle dog mix that I've had for about, almost 10 years now.
Oh, yeah.
I have a great job because I'm able to take him to the chancery every day with me. So great job when you can take your pet to work. Bishop Kimmy is a dog lover and has a stash of treats that Bazinga prances down the hallway to always get his treat from the bishop every day.
Is there a story behind Bazinga's name?
So I was pastor of St. Mary in Derby when I got him, probably in about 13 or 14. And I had a language arts teacher there that was always on me. He's like, Father, you got to get a dog. You got to get a dog. You know, kids will love it. I'm like, I'm not going to get a dog. You're crazy. You know, it was about a year later during Lent and I'm working out on the elliptical machine at the Derby Rec Center. And I'm like, I think I'm going to get a dog. So it kind of worked that way. And about the time that I got him, the CBS TV series Big Bang Theory was going in full swing. And the character Sheldon Cooper on the Big Bang Theory, that was his punchline, was Bazinga. And it's kind of become a moniker for the TV show. So that's what I landed with.
I like dogs. I will say Bazinga is unique in that that dog tends to be indifferent to everyone but you. And my Bazinga will wander into my office as far as the door, just look at me for a moment, and I will proffer a hand or a pet.
Yeah.
Completely ignores me and leaves. Like as soon as I notice he's there, he leaves.
Yeah. He's a one owner dog.
He is definitely that.
Yeah. So of course, you know, enjoying his companionship. I'm a pretty avid pipe smoker.
Oh, that's right.
So glad I have a nice collection of pipes.
That I can count that as a pastime for myself as well.
Right. Have you seen his collection of pipes?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny that we're doing this. We're doing Pat later today because you and Pat have become like heroes to my college students because they know that you guys smoke. Honestly, like pipes and Pat cigar. Yeah. Like they've seen you at Cigar Chateau and stuff like that. They go there thinking they're very hip and things like that. And you've become like, they want to be you when they get older. Right.
It really undermines me when I try and encourage a seminarians not to smoke. Yeah. And they look to the Vicar General and the Vicar of Priests and
smoke. Yeah. Yeah. Father York and I enjoy our time together at the Cigar Chateau on the east side of Wichita. And actually, that's really been an enjoyable place to spend time. We both go, we're wearing our clerics, and we're very well accepted and regarded there. And I've actually ended up having some really good heart-to-heart conversations with guys. I find that tobacco smokers tend to be a little more conservative in many things, religiously and politically. Mm. And so there was an overall acceptance there that I've enjoyed. But it's led to, I think, some nice opportunities to give testimony to my own faith, or guys as they get to know me will ask for prayers. And I was able successfully to enshrine an 8x10 black and white photo of Father Capon.
Oh, awesome.
With his
way.
Yeah, so on the mantle of the Cigar Chateau, when you go in Wichita, you'll see Father Capon prominently displayed up on the mantle by the TV screen. So
that is cool. Father Capon being another famous pipe smoker of the diocese.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Are you a pipe guy, Chad?
I went through a phase where I tried to be. I couldn't keep the coal lit.
That's me.
And I run so much. At one point, I'm just like, why am I even trying to like tobacco? Because I spend a lot of my time building my lungs up in running. Yeah. And so why would I do it? So I don't do any tobacco.
You're not supposed to inhale it anyway, so it shouldn't have.
So I do it all wrong.
But it is a little higher maintenance smoke than a cigar. So I tend to be about 70% pipes, 30% cigars. Yeah. So I've grown an appreciation of those. So if I just want to do something that's just like, I just want to have something low maintenance, I'll go to a cigar. Something a little more involved, a pipe, if I'm reading or watching TV.
I feel like I need to be one of those kids on the cartoon with the bubble pipe. I'm just going to pull that out. You're the little kid where you blow on it and the bubbles come out of it. I need one of those.
Yeah. I do have a Kanza Catholic listener in Iowa that twice a year sends me a bunch of cigars in the mail because we mentioned it. So if any of our About 4 o'clock listeners want to send us Christmas gifts, something to think about.
Yeah, so beyond that, like many people, I also have an appreciation of good bourbons and whiskeys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, enjoying learning more about that. And then I try to exercise regularly. That I would say is a pastime. I try to get in 3 times a week. And like many of our priests now, work with a trainer at Genesis Health Clubs. I want to give a shout out to Manny. He's whipped a lot of us into shape.
He trains more priests than anyone else in the diocese, for sure. Yeah,
he would be like the vicar trainer for priests. I try to get in 3 times a week and doing that and just staying as fit as I can in that regard. And then, you know, I'm a movie watcher. I'm not a real sports buff. I mean, I can enjoy an athletic event. Of course, was tuning in recently to World Cup soccer, football, but my go-to is just, you know, good movies and shows and more toward, you know, different documentary type things. I just finished, I think it was the 8th season of the History Channel series Alone, where they drop people off in the wilderness and you see how long they can last. Jeez. And
so, getting ready for your upcoming travels.
Yeah. I'll be, this afternoon, I'll ask your prayers. I'm getting on a plane and heading to Northern Alaska to help serve in the Diocese of Fairbanks. It'll be second trip I've made up there, and I'll be going to Nome, Alaska for Christmas and New Year. They have 46 churches and 20 priests.
Wow.
440,000 square miles. So it's just a vast area. Currently, they're without a bishop. Bishop Zielinski was appointed Bishop of New Ulm, Minnesota.
Oh, so that's right. Now, I forgot about that.
Archbishop Belisario of Anchorage Juneau is the apostolic administrator. Mm-hmm. So prayers for them as they wait for a new shepherd up in that way.
So you're in Nome, which is Diocese of Fairbanks.
Correct.
I just tried to Google Maps driving Nome to Fairbanks. There's not even an option.
There's
just a 4.5 hour flight with a connecting stop from one place in the diocese to another place in the diocese without even how far it is between them.
Right. Yeah. So my trip will be Wichita to Seattle, Seattle to Anchorage. I have to stay the night in Anchorage, and then tomorrow I'll fly a 90-minute flight from Anchorage to Nome.
There are not many travels that really spark envy in my heart, but that does, at the drop of a hat.
I've really enjoyed it. I went up last spring for Holy Week and Easter, and I was in the vicinity of southwest of Fairbanks, Nenana and Healy. Healy is right on the doorstep of the Denali National Park. I actually spent Holy Saturday in Denali National Park, saw Mount McKinley, and they still had a fair amount of snow on the ground. But what got me interested about coming back was when I had a visit with Bishop Zielinski. He said he will not allow any priests to come to the diocese until they've spent a couple of weeks in the depths of winter. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of took that as a little personal challenge. Bishop Kimmy was open to me coming back. And again, since as a vicar general, I don't have a parish. And so I do a lot of supply work in the diocese. I fill in for guys on the weekends or weekdays as needed. So it allows me to travel around. But on the high holy days, usually I'm tucking in at the cathedral liturgies or maybe at Father Jared's parish at St. Francis. So I just felt called, you know, with this opportunity to go help out where it was needed.
Chad told a psycho story the other day about going to Vladivostok for a week as a seminarian.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk about that in a future pod. Okay. Because in a... I would rather go to Nome than Vladivostok. And I want to hear that. I want the people to hear that insane story as we go on. But Nome sounds like a safer and more enjoyable
experience.
Yeah, I think
it'll be all right.
Yeah, there's no chance of murder probably in Nome, or a very minimal chance of murder, I would think, in Nome.
Yeah. I do. It makes me think I was not exactly threatened, but strongly encouraged by my administrative assistant, Heidi Urock.
Sounds right already.
Encouragement and threaten is a fine line for Heidi, I think.
I was told I had to mention her name at least three times in a positive way. So Heidi, this is your positive shout out.
She'll take that as positive.
That's right.
She takes care of my schedule. So, you know, I don't want anything going crazy.
Those are important people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, last week when we were talking with Father Jared, actually before, funny story. So every year here at the House of Formation, each semester we have a skills class that I kind of arrange. Just kind of teach the guys basic skills that they may need in the parish. So we've done automotive, we've done woodworking, we've done electric. And one semester we did plumbing. Father David's dad, David Sr., for many years ran a plumbing business. Now it's your brother Evan that does it, who was my classmate in high school. So I've known Evan for a lot of years. But so we did a semester on plumbing. So I invited David Sr. to come in and teach the guys some of the basics of, you know, how to unclog things, where to check things. And I called David, Father David, if he wanted to come and join us. And he said, sure. And so he came and talked with some of the guys because you worked with your dad for a while there. The funny part of it was, though, I also called Jared to see if he wanted. And he's just like, well, they basically just trusted me to sweep the office. I never actually did any of the real plumbing work. Yeah. So he didn't join us. But you did. And you came and talked with the guys, the basic plumbing.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Now, to Father Jared's credit, that was more of a workflow issue at the time.
Of course.
You know, I and my brother Shane were kind of more in the field, so there just weren't those opportunities, and he was a few years younger. So.
I was going to say, how many years are between you and Jared?
I believe about
Jared?
4 years.
Four years difference. Okay, because it's you, Shane, and then Jared, and then Evan, and then Ryan.
Yeah, and there was a little hiatus between the first three of us, and then Mom and Dad expanded the family a little bit later in life with Evan and Ryan. So we
is there a sister
family.
In there?
No sisters.
So just boys.
Okay. Dad always wanted a daughter, but kept coming up with boys.
So, didn't work out.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, last week we spoke with Jared about his vocation story. And so it's kind of really cool to have the two podcasts back to back. And so was hoping you would share with us your vocation story.
Thank you. Yeah. And just want to say I appreciated hearing your guys' stories too. And I'm a big fan. I love tuning in every Monday when you drop an episode and I love the laughter and the banter. It just lifts my spirits. So you guys are doing a great job. Really appreciate it. Oh, and by the way, my goal going up to Nome, Alaska is to get a listener from Alaska.
Yes! Yeah, that's right. We will send stickers with you.
I will plant those things everywhere.
Tell them that we are waiting for someone to tune in Alaska.
Well, I've met their vicar for clergy there, and their vicar general is also the vocations director, Father Robert Pfaff. So I'll talk to Father Pfaff. And one of their seminarians, Joshua Miller, is a seminarian at Mundelein. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I had a good conversation with him the last time I was up there. So my goal is to get a listener from Alaska to, you know, check that box for you.
I'll go get us one from Hawaii. Everyone kind of play their part.
Everyone sacrificed to make this happen.
Yeah. You'll go to Vladivostok.
Vladivostok, man.
So I did not grow up really envisioning a vocation to the priesthood. Actually, as Father Jared might have mentioned, he was the one that was signaling an interest in a vocation early on. And it was either to priesthood or religious life. I moved through life kind of on the trajectory I thought of my parents, you know, of marriage, family. And so it was not until later, that I tell people I backed into my vocation. I didn't go walking forward into it. And so we grew up in Christ the King Parish, went to grade school there, Bishop Carroll High School, went to Pitt State University for 2 years in Southeast Kansas, then transferred to the University of Kansas and finished in 92.
Rock chalk.
Rock chalk.
Yes, absolutely.
You're outnumbered here.
Got a liberal arts degree in English. I enjoyed writing and composition, and my thoughts had been to get into editing or journalism, and actually had been accepted to the graduate school for journalism, but I wasn't quite sure about that commitment and certainly that financial commitment of moving forward with, you know, master's degree. I had dated, you know, through high school and college, was dating a lovely young woman in my senior year of college. But then in the spring, toward the end of the semester, I tore my anterior cruciate ligament in my left knee playing yard volleyball in a condo. And it wasn't even that crazy of an accident, but it led to me having to have knee surgery shortly after I graduated. So that summer of 92 was kind of the prototypical, you know, summer of convalescence, a la
modern day Saint Ignatius. Yeah, right on.
Yeah, I had a bum knee, so I couldn't do the plumbing work I've done every summer for my dad. So I was kind of sidelined from that. I decided to kind of cool the relationship with the girl I was dating. And I was really at a crossroads. I wasn't sure what to do next, professionally, vocationally. So I actually started a journal. I started journaling that summer. And it was the typical journal questions. Who am I? What's the meaning of life? What do you want from me, Lord? And in a nutshell, it really came down to me saying, well, before I do anything else, Lord, I'll give priesthood a try. We, as a family, had always grown up in friendship with priests. My folks were involved with some of the youth ministries early on at Christ the King and got to know a number of the priests there. So we were used to having priests of our parish come over for dinner. They had befriended several priests. So I was able to see, you know, priesthood outside of church. I'd see priests come over in their street clothes and we'd go water skiing or snow skiing. And so helped me know that there was a bit more of a life. You know, I always joke, I think growing up, many of us thought that at the end of the day, the priest goes into the church, he lays down on the pew, goes to sleep, and then the next morning gets up and starts it all over again, you know? So there's some mystery behind that. So I was able to understand that. And so it was in that summer of 92 that I approached the diocese. I talked to a priest at our parish who put me in touch with a transitional vocations team. It had Father Jim Billinger was transitioning out as vocations director and Father Matt McGinnis was beginning. So Father Billinger handed me over to Father McGinnis. I actually went on a long driving trip with my mom, my two younger brothers, and my aunt up to the Yellowstone Park area and things. So I kind of just dropped this on them and I said, then I've got to go. And, you know, let me know when I get back what you think. And so they moved me through the steps, which I don't think were quite as involved as they are now. No,
it has grown considerably over the years.
I got the fast track to get in.
Someone from maybe a little past your generation told me once they were asked in a meeting, have you been in any relationships? And they're like, yeah. And they said, any of them serious? Kind of. Okay. And then that
was the extent. Right. Check out the boxes.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way anymore.
No. I think I probably would not have gotten in on the fall of 92 as I did had those steps been in place. But in the end, it was determined that I would go to the Pontifical College Josephinum in Columbus, Ohio in the fall of 92. And I began the first of 2 years of pre-theology. So when I arrived, they had just switched from 1 to 2 years of pre-theology. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed on for theology. It was decided I would just stay at the Josephinum. And so I spent 6 years there. And there were aspects of the seminary that I enjoyed. There were aspects that I found very challenging. And so, you know, I can look back with a mix, you know, glad it's behind me. and now, moving into priestly life and ministry. So I was ordained on May 23rd, 1998. Get to share that day with Father Capon. A day to May 23rd and have, moved forward ever since.
That's awesome. And both you and Jared were at Josephine at the same
time. We overlapped for 1 year.
For 1 year.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So my last year was his first year of theology. And I think there was a little conversation that happened on the diocesan side.
That's what he mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. I maybe at the time Father McGinnis had approached him and said, you know, what would you think if you spend a year with your brother. And I think by and large, it was fine. We, you know, like all siblings, we get along pretty well and we have our moments, but we get over it and we move on, you know? So, yeah.
That's still a thing we have to consider sometimes. I've never had to look at it like, do these siblings get along? But sometimes an older sibling can cast a long shadow, either positively or negatively. And if it's too positive, then this guy can't be himself. He's got to live up to it. Or if it's too negative, I'm like, I don't want this guy to have the baggage that his older sibling set. So sometimes that is something we've had to look at for other
Father
guys.
Jared, I don't know if he mentioned that in his visit with you, but one of the seminary formators there, Father Bill Lynn, a Jesuit, had met Jared in the early part of the year and said, oh, Father Lees or Jared Lees, he said, your brother is David. He says, you've got big shoes to fill. And Jared's like, that's okay, I wear boots.
That's a great one.
So, and the funny thing is now I'm wearing boots and he's not. So,
You do have a distinctive style at the chancery, and Father David often shows up at the chancery, cowboy boots. In the wintertime, you've got your black cowboy hat on, your long duster on, and so you have a larger Western flair than anyone else, I think, at the chancery.
I tell people I'm like my dad. We're both drugstore cowboys. Yeah, I kind of picked that look up partly from him. Actually, I kind of became a fan of the TV series Longmire.
That I've was heard set of that.
In, it's about a sheriff in up in Wyoming, I think. And he wore this great Stetson hat, and it was a brown hat. So I actually went to Hatman Jack's here in Wichita.
Great store.
And I brought a photo. I said, can you make this hat for me?
Uh-huh.
And he did. And it was a great experience. I was there with him for about an hour where he shaped it and everything. And we tried it on a couple of times. I liked it so much that I had a black one made to go with my clerics. And I actually now wear that one more than
I don't think I've seen the brown one before.
Yeah. But so
it's fascinating to watch craftsmen work. I mean, just Hatman Jack or anyone, like when someone knows their art, I love those conversations. I could watch talented people work all day long.
Yeah. It was very mesmerizing to see him apply his trade.
Now, in the family, when there's a child to be baptized, who gets the call? You or Jared? How does that? Like, I get to take most of my family, but I don't know how it works for you and Dev, Gare, but yeah, how does that get draws?
We kind of follow the lead of our siblings on that.
Okay.
And each of us are godparents of our nieces or nephews. Mm-hmm. So usually if one of us is a godparent, the other will.
Cool.
Reside at the baptism, or sometimes we just go back and forth. Yeah.
So never try to do a joint baptism where you're both holding the flowing water at the same time.
That would be very tasteful.
Given that we're on air on a public.
Is that something I have to edit out later?
Yeah. I delete that. No.
We hold competitions to see who gets to do it.
That's very funny, actually.
I could see that, actually. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. A race to the baptismal font.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
A question about role as vicar general. Mm-hmm. So you're not in what we would maybe consider, and Chad has similar vibes of this, pastoral parish life.
Right.
What do you experience as the challenges of that? Maybe some benefit, maybe some blessings that we wouldn't expect. And then how do you find yourself still need that pastoral experience? Where do you find that? Where do you go for that?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. I always take heart that in one of St. Paul's lists of gifts is the gift of administration. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is a need for that
Absolutely.
Sort of holy order of the church. And the bishop has invited me to have a place in that ordering of the church. So it really is administrative in nature. When I'm trying to explain it to other persons, particularly who aren't Catholic, I sometimes describe it as being like the chief operating officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I supervise the majority of the directors of our different offices in our curia. And the curia is just that word for the chancery office, the offices that support the mission of the bishop in the diocese. So I supervise their different ministries like communication, development, right to life and social justice, office of Hispanic ministry, office of marriage and family life, and so on. And I help them in their specific missions. I chair a number of different committees, like our diocesan building commission. So if pastors want to do any building or renovating of their churches or schools or other parish facilities, we ask them to visit with us about that. I also chair our charter review board, which ensures safe environments in our diocese. And, you know, following the Dallas Charter of ensuring that we are making a safe place for all youth and vulnerable adults in our diocese. I'm a liaison with Catholic Charities. So I visit regularly with the executive director, Wendy Glick, just now retiring and finishing a great term. Tracy Kennedy will be the new executive director, so I'll start working with her and coordinating their work with the bishop's mission. And then any sort of troubleshooting that comes up, just whatever the bishop needs me to do. I'll also help with the sacrament of confirmation. If bishop can't get a parish in on his rotation, pastors can reach out to me and I can preside at confirmation for youth in the diocese. So it does have that challenge of being a little more meeting and office oriented that maybe isn't quite as persistent in a parish setting. But, you know, after 8 years, I still feel called to the work. There's been a great value. I have learned things as a priest and as a man that I wouldn't have learned in a parish setting. So it's stretched me. It's learned me how it's learned me how to work with and collaborate with others in these different departments, appreciating their abilities and their skills and partaking in that mission of the bishop. So we just recently worked with Bishop Kimmy on developing some new core values for our Curia members. And these would answer the question, how do we behave? So we've identified, you know, that we want to behave along the lines of being united in mission, living out discipleship-centered stewardship, and having apostolic courage. And then we also identified three what we call strategic anchors, which is what do we really want to focus our abilities on as a diocese? And we want to act that everything is relational. So we, how will this inspire Christ-centered relationships? And that's really along the lines of what we're seeing in focus ministries.
Absolutely.
They build that relationship to foster trust and then create an opportunity to, you know, invite someone into that relationship with Jesus.
Which is how St. Paul works. I mean, that's that's a scriptural vision.
Yeah, so we're definitely stealing a page from that playbook. Catholic education at the service of the family, the domestic church, and not just our great Catholic schools, but all catechesis, our parish schools of religion, our formation of adults to become Catholics, any formation, how are we supporting our families to be that first place of encounter with God? This is the domestic church. So how will this lead all generations to know Jesus Christ? And then finally, healthy priests. We're blessed, as you guys have reflected so much, we're blessed with the presbyterate of our diocese. We
Absolutely.
Have got a strong, homegrown group of priests. We enjoy great harmony with one another, very accepting of one another. And that's a strength that we want to continue to support and lean into. So how does what we do lead to healthy life and ministry of our priests? So I will assist Bishop Kimmy in continuing to pray on these and embrace them, promote them, and help that really define his ministry of care of our diocese. So that's a lot of the type of work that I do. Maybe the challenge is, you know, not having as many pastoral opportunities. I don't do a lot of baptisms or weddings or funerals, of course. And I go home in the evenings, usually to a pretty quiet apartment and a dog who adores me, of course. But, you know, there's not that evening activity that the pastors have in their parishes, which sometimes isn't a bad thing. You know, I'm kind of a 9-to-5 guy. I don't mind that. But I do find different pastoral opportunities and spiritual direction. So I do have about 8 to 10 persons that I meet with on a recurring basis to offer spiritual direction. Maybe like some of you guys, I went through the Institute of Priestly Formation in spiritual direction training. So applying those rules of St. Ignatius that you guys have referred to in helping people in their particular spiritual life. So I find that to be kind of a pastoral outlet. One of my other responsibilities, I am the stable exorcist for the diocese.
That's right.
So I do a lot of ministry with persons that are experiencing any sorts of spiritual difficulties, temptations, any sort of diabolical or demonic activity in their life, which, you know, fortunately in our diocese tends to be on kind of the lower echelons of obsession and oppression. But I do spend a fair amount of time interacting with people, trying to sort out what might be challenging for them. And a lot of that just ends up being listening. People will come to me and usually they preface it, you're going to think I'm crazy when I tell you this. And I'm like, believe me, I'm not going to be crazy. But a lot of times these individuals just need someone to listen to them. And I think I'm a really good listener. I can just sit and allow someone to sort of pour out their story and pour out their concerns and then just try to prayerfully listen and respond. So it's even a sort of spiritual direction itself to assist.
You spoke at St. Paul maybe now 2 months ago by the time this comes out, and it was a hit. It was a full church.
It was a great opportunity.
People are still talking about it all the time. They want you to come back and things like that. I think it would be, I don't know if when this would make sense here in a few months, but to hear about Alaska and to talk about exorcism a little bit and the role of the priest in an exorcism might be a fun podcast topic in months to come. But it was a hit. It was really
and I really enjoyed that. I appreciated that. It continues to be a very compelling topic for people.
Yeah.
Just a few days later after that talk, I spoke to a new men's group at St. Mary Parish in Derby about that topic. There were 80 men there.
Oh my gosh.
To listen in. And it wasn't just because of that topic, but and then a few days after that, I did a presentation at the annual Reagan Institute for Catholic School Teachers and had 135 teachers.
Yeah. If you see that on the list, which you're
the average classroom is about 20, 25. So you had the largest classroom by
Chad
far.
Chad and I both talked to me at like 20 people. Yeah. At
Signed up. Yeah. Less than that showed up.
That's funny.
So it continues to be... And I'm seeing, you know, many exorcists are seeing an uptick in not so much full possession, but people dabbling with the diabolical, with pagan activities, New Age activities, you know. And I always tell people there is no spiritual Switzerland. There is you can't be just spiritually neutral in life. You're either going to be aligned with the Lord or you're going to be aligned with the evil one. And you may not know it. What's the great Bob Dylan song? You're going to serve somebody. And it may not be the devil or it may not be the Lord, but you're going to serve somebody. So helping people understand that in this day and age.
Well, I think we could go on talking about that for a while, but I think we are at the end of our time. So thank you, Father David, for being here. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. And the final word today goes to David.
Thank you. One of my big saints is St. Maximian Kolbe, and I have several books of just some of his sayings and collections. And this one is just a statement on brotherly love. St. Maximian states, "Dear children, if love be your companion through life, and you live in mutual love, you will have a foretaste of heaven already here on earth."
See you next week.